I want to turn now to an area about changes in how the convention has been implemented over time, and ask you to cast your mind back and think about specific policy decisions that were made by the committee, or specific decisions, decisions on specific cases that have changed the way, in your mind, the way the World Heritage Convention has been implemented.
Well, I'm thinking mostly of sites, you know, nominated sites and sites that are nominations which are different perhaps than those that have come before and which suddenly become a model for change. The requirements over time of the convention have changed. To get on the World Heritage List, you know, in simple terms, it looks more or less like it's the same system. There's 6 criteria for cultural heritage, and there's 4 criteria for natural heritage, even if they're grouped together from 1 to 10, and the words culture and nature have disappeared. You know exactly what it is. It's exactly the same thing. The other requirements, authenticity, integrity, site variations, management has always been there. But nevertheless, as the specific articulation of these needs has evolved, every so often, a country, there's always a lag. You know, the countries are told, in 2005, they were told, well, from now on, a nomination to be accepted for cultural heritage also has to address integrity. And there's a lag between the time you say that and, you know, the ability of states parties to pick up what that means. So I'm just trying to think of nominations where somebody or some state party or some group of people involved with the writing of these things have sort of stumbled on something and made it, in a way, created a model that can then be looked at more closely and adapted and modified or used by others to enhance their own ability to communicate the values of their site. One of the ones I like to think about, maybe this is because I saw it sort of develop, was the Lunenburg nomination. Gordon Fulton, I think, gets the credit for the first time looking at this simple requirement called authenticity in a nomination document. And rather than saying, as so many state parties had done, this site is undeniably authentic, and then gone on to the next question, Gordon recognized that, in fact, there were 4 words in the authenticity requirement, you know, design, material, workmanship, and setting, and that perhaps it would be useful in talking about Lunenburg to talk about what the authenticity of each of those 4 words actually was. So he talked about material authenticity of Lunenburg, surviving physical fabric. He talked about authenticity of form and design. He talked about authenticity of setting, and therefore, thinking about changes, and authenticity of workmanship. Authenticity doesn't exist in a vacuum. You can't just talk about authenticity of design without saying, well, design of what? You have to sort of understand what does this site represent? What story is being told by Lunenburg? And once you understand that, then you can say, relative to that conception of OUV, of value, are these designs authentic carriers of that OUV? So he actually put together 4 little sections, you know, quite well written, quite clear. And, you know, the first time I read that, he sometimes says that it came from me, but I think it came from him, because I was bugging him, you know, in the process. But the first time I read that, I said, that's a big advance. And I hope this document gets circulated because it would lend specificity to that discussion. And it would help state parties ask themselves what's authentic or inauthentic or less authentic in their place, and therefore give them some management targets for improvement. You know, maybe the physical fabric is fine, but the setting, the authenticity of setting is threatened. So that would begin to help them sort out, you know, where they should put their time and effort. So I think, you know, when I'm thinking of, I'm not so much thinking at this point of policies which affected change, but I'm thinking more of innovation coming with nominations that channeled or could channel or get other countries to improve their own ability to do things. You know, often I think you learn from bad examples. You know, I mean, this is a good example, but I think bad examples set up specters of change which, you know, need to be confronted, because you don't want to repeat something again. I think there's always been a fear inside World Heritage that if you do something a different way, it may set a precedent, and if that precedent is not carefully, or if that operation is not carefully defined, that precedent could destabilize or undo the convention. And one of the ones that always, certainly at the time, although I think in the end it didn't destabilized, but we were certainly worried about destabilization was the Angkor nomination, where this one came in from the side. It came in, whether it was well-driven or not, or well-merited or not, it came not from a state party. It came from the Director General of UNESCO, who was in cahoots with Prince Norodom Sihanouk of Cambodia. And for good or bad reasons, they said, one of the things we can do to help get Cambodia back on its feet is have a World Heritage Site. And what better place than Angkor? And so let's just put it on the list. And if that had happened just that way, I think it would have undermined the convention. It would have said that this, you know, long-term commitment to developing and refining a process of clarifying, trying to be clear about the OUV, trying to be clear about authenticity, trying to be clear about management requirements, if that could all be set aside just because a particular director general had some ideas, it wouldn't be long before there'd be another one like that, and then another one. And then after a while, it'd just be a kind of open season on the convention. This one, Angkor, did end up, in spite of the fact that ICOMO said it wasn't ready to go on the list because there isn't any country, there isn't any management regime, there isn't any national authority, there's nothing. The Director General of UNESCO wasn't happy with that, but we said we have a job to do. You know, we have to maintain the rigor. We have to apply the same rigor to this one that we apply to everything else. We are cooperating with you, Mr. Director General, because we normally take 14 months or 17 months to do this. You've given us 3 months, and we're going to do it in 3 months. But we're not necessarily going to come forward and say it should be on the World Heritage List, because if it doesn't meet the criteria, we're going to say that. And that's exactly what ICOMOS did. In the end, because of politics, it did get on the list. The damage was moderated because it was immediately placed on the World Heritage List in danger, and ICOMOS's missing elements became the conditions to get off the World Heritage List in danger. And it didn't somehow become a precedent, happily. It didn't become a precedent. I'm more worried about other negative examples, you know, that have happened more recently, and maybe I will turn out to be wrong, but the number of sites that ended up moving from defer to inscription last year, and I'm not speaking only of the, you know, I'm not directing my distaste simply to the fact that something jumped two levels. I'm thinking about the implications of that jump for some sites. I'm worried about, you know, because the tendency of states parties these days is to just get their sites on the list. If they're nominated, they should be on the list. And any problems they have can be dealt with later. And I think this is a dangerous attitude. The operational guidelines and the convention together are set up to ensure that you deal with the problems first, at least the big ones. And that way, you know, the convention functions as a kind of, there's a carrot, you know. If you get your house in order, you can end up on the list. Now it seems that your house cannot be in order. It doesn't have to be in order. You can get on the list. And afterwards, who cares? Because, as I've said earlier, quite often once you're on the list, the attention paid by the state party to that site diminishes.